Welcome to the True Falls Film Festival.
Welcome to the True Falls podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofelt. In our next two episodes, we'll be doing something a little bit different from our other shows. We're talking with directors who attended the 2018 Rough Cut Retreat, which was hosted by True Falls and Catapult Film Fund. This summer's retreat was in upstate New York. Five filmmakers, currently editing their films, came from around the world to share their rough cuts with other filmmakers and mentors from the industry. After each screening, they talked through everything from concepts to technical edits. True Falls' Emily Edwards went to the retreat this year. A few months later, she caught up with the filmmakers to see how things were going. In this first Rough Cut episode, we'll be talking about the cutting room floor. How do you decide what to exclude? How do you edit to reframe your story? And what happens when you realize you don't have enough? Here's Emily Edwards.
First up, filmmaker Mo Scarpelli joins me from California, but her film Anbessa, which means lion in English, is based in Ethiopia. Anbessa is a coming-of-age story that follows a 10-year-old boy, Aslif, who is displaced from his community when a sprawling condominium project comes to his neighborhood. For more than 2 years, Mo followed Aslif's adventures of trying to fit into a place that is leaving him behind for the sake of progress. Anbessa becomes a hybrid documentary as it then flows into a stylized, directed interpretation of his dreams, where he accesses the strength of a lion and interacts with the world around him. And for Mo, as the filmmaker, striking a balance between plot and style becomes tricky when incorporating these fantasy scenes. It becomes a question of what should end up on the cutting room floor and how do those cuts impact the emotionality of the film.
What I found, though, in the course of following Aslif around and getting to know him and us kind of having this rapport together and spending a lot of time just the two of us, it actually would do a disservice to his kind of interpretation of the world or his true, I say, story. Like, I think it does a disservice to just kind of observe it because you got to get inside this kid's head to really understand what's important to him. Like a garbage truck isn't a garbage truck. It's a villain that's taking away his toys because he uses things he finds in the trash to make lights and radios and trinkets. And the forest that looms above his house is not just a floor. I mean, if you saw it as an adult, like I did, it's just like kind of a sparse little forest with not a lot going on. But for him, it's an enchanted kind of place where hyenas come out and he can face them as a lion, you know? But I really believe in the validity of fantasy and enchantment in order to interpret the world, and I don't see it as escapism. I see it as just as valid as, you know, real life experiences like walking down the street and seeing something. So I really wanted to make sure that, you know, the film kind of did a service to that, and also that I was just honest with myself about my own interpretations of what I find interesting in the space that it also inhabits. We did the kind of reenactments of his dreams and his fantasies. But then he also said, you know what, like, do what you will with this, because, you know, if you think that the dream should be scarier, like, then that's fine too, you know. And we kind of had this dialogue about it. And with a 10-year-old kid, you wouldn't expect someone to be so open about someone kind of taking license with their story. But he meant it. He was like, and a lot of it is that Aslif tells stories, like him and his mom. That's a huge part of who they are. And you see it in the film that storytelling is a big part of people understanding the world around them. I find that so beautiful. Not because it's different than me, actually. I find it beautiful when I was growing up, like using stories to understand things. And so basically, like, you know, Aslif's always improving on a story. And like there's this tradition in Ethiopian culture, you say at the beginning of a story, you say story, a cow's stable. Or the person has to answer, a cow's stable. And it means like, I'm ready to sit in the stable and talk to you and listen to the story. And at the end of the story, you don't say the end. You say, now return my story and wipe my mouth with bread. And that's the English translation of what is said. And what that phrase means is, now, you know, improve on my story. Tell me how I could have done better. And this is how the oral tradition of stories about animals and about heroes and people, how these things improve over time and become these like really cool and funny and interesting life lesson type stories. So Oslo's aware of that kind of fluid interpretation of the world through stories. And so he was basically saying, by the end of my time with him or for the production, he was saying, you know, I told you my story, now return my story back to me and wipe my mouth with bread. I mean, he like said that to me with my translator, and we were like, you mean that? Like, we can take this, you know, and like kind of mess with it in a way, because I want it to feel as close to you as possible. But, you know, there's going to be shots of things that I just imagine that you are thinking of. And he's like, yes, you can do that. You know, that's what storytelling is. So it's really interesting because he is very smart in that way. But it also gives me kind of the license as a person who wants to make a film about this kid, like, you know, to not be so, I don't know, you can't be really straight up about like what's going on in someone's head and how the dreams, a lot of the dreams and fantasies are edited based on like, you know, emotion and energy and images that just represent something.
Yeah. And you represent a lot of them through these really, it's so beautifully messy, these dream sequences that kind of flow in and out. Mm-hmm. And during the discussions, we talked a little bit about cutting in and out of those, and whether to make those really like concrete cuts of dream world versus real world, because when we first encountered them, they were a little bit slippery. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering kind of how that landed for you.
I really had the film in a place where things were super messy, because I want as a whole for you to walk away from the film and not necessarily need to or want to even like interpret what is real and what is not real. I didn't want things to be wake up, go to sleep, wake up, go to sleep, because he inhabits this mind space throughout his day, but so do I in other ways, and so do people, and that's what perception really is. So not full-on lion fantasy all the time, but you know, like being able to kind of focus on something and slip into a space with your brain and just sit with that. And he does that in his real life. It's just as valid, like I said, as real life. So I wanted you to always kind of be slippery. But for good storytelling, you do have to kind of, you can't make it confusing, obviously. It can't be, it doesn't need to be super straightforward, like wake up, go to sleep, wake up, go to sleep. But it does need to have some sort of indicators that allow an audience to not be like, where the hell am I right now? And like pull, like retreat from it. You know, I want you to feel immersed, not at like you just don't understand what's going on. I think it was 91 minutes. So then I basically went to it with a hatchet and cut it down to like 78 minutes. Hmm. And that gave us clarity about storylines in ways that was really nice. And we just were like, it's missing the sum of things, is how he says, Nico, my editor, says it. He's like, it's just missing that. It's moving faster, but it's almost like too, it's moving too fast to like see what's special about it anymore, you know? Mm. And so I kind of had to like, yeah, it was an interesting process of like taking a bunch of stuff out, but then bringing it back in, not because it was informationally getting you from here to here, but more just based on energy. It was so much about flow and about like, how do you need to feel this way at this time, and then feel disappointment, and then feel a win, and then feel, you know, his emotion here and his distance from his mom and how that's growing. And it's just, it became very murky to figure that out. And it was a kind of a strange process of being a weirdo for like 3 weeks and watching it 9 million times. But all of the feedback was so useful and made the film so much better in terms of deciding what felt redundant and what wasn't necessary. So it definitely shaved things out, not even entire scenes, but just like, okay, we got that idea already in the scene, like let's get out of there or whatever it is. But yeah, this film was not one that got better by shortening it, strangely. It like got like your expectations almost change, where you expect it to be this like, you know, I don't know, super narratively like plotty thing, or it started to feel more plotty or something like that. And it's not a plotty film. There's not a lot of story. The story is mostly in this kid's head. So you need to be in that space, and you need to kind of edit based on your gut when it comes to that stuff.
Coming up after the break, we'll talk about reframing. Sometimes it's not about what ends up on the cutting room floor. It's the film's direction that isn't quite working. Hey, listeners, it's Allison, letting you know that this episode of the True False podcast is brought to you by the University of Missouri. That is, in fact, where we are making the show right now. We're here in the KBIA studios at the University of Missouri School of Journalism, which is famous for the Missouri Method. Here to tell us what the heck the Missouri Method is our podcast producer and MU journalism student, Abby Ivory Ganya.
Hey.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
What's been like a highlight for you?
I came in for a reporting shift one day. It was my second ever, and I got assigned a breaking story, and I followed it. And then the next morning, I was in line at Starbucks when somebody texted me and said they heard my story on NPR.
Sounds like you're getting a lot of good experience. Thanks, Abby.
Thanks, Allison.
And we also want to thank the University of Missouri, home to the Missouri Method, for their generous support of this podcast. Welcome back to the True False Podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofelt. In this episode, True False's Emily Edwards talks with directors who brought early versions of their films to the True False and Catapult Film Fund's Rough Cut Retreat. Let's get back into the conversation about editing. Here's Emily.
Filmmaker Hannah Giante's film, Truth or Consequences, is set in a small, dusty New Mexico town. It's a speculative documentary about progress and what gets left in its wake. The film is set in an alternative present where progress is catapulted, civilians embarking on space travel with sights set on another planet. But she tells the story of the handful who stayed behind. If it sounds complicated, that's because it is. Hannah grappled with figuring out how to structure the story, and she decided to completely reframe her film.
So we talked a lot about like whether this was, you know, a portrait of a town, a portrait of people, whether it was this hybrid sci-fi documentary, and genre was a big question of discussion. And I'm wondering now how you're thinking about this.
Well, I think I got excited about this phrase speculative documentary, because it is descriptive, and also it both means something and doesn't mean something, which is always the best. So the premise that I'm describing to you at first sounds potentially sounds quite radical and potentially sounds quite forced, right? There's the risk of it sounding, ooh, came up with a fun idea and then made your movie that fun idea. And I think one of the things that has been the most incredible for me is what it means to recontextualize a documentary, what it means to say, to sort of claim that there is some type of fictionalized element. And I want to be clear that there's nothing in the film that is actually fictional, right? So everything is documentary footage. There's some experimental animations, and there are some experimental use of archives, but nothing is fabricated, nothing is staged. How I began to feel, and a lot of this happened at the Rough Cut Retreat, was is that I had made a cut that was about a small town in southern New Mexico that was struggling. It was about a small American town that was struggling. It was about economic hardship. It was about class structures. It was about wealth disparity. It was about privatization. And so I built an entire cut that was from the perspective of this small town changed its name in the 1950s, thought that economic prosperity would happen. That didn't pan out. Now they have a new eccentric hope about the spaceport. Will that pan out? Will this thing now save them? Will it bring economic prosperity? And the more I built that cut, and again, showing it at the retreat was a very huge part of this, the more I began feeling like it was not necessarily adding anything to this conversation. That the conversation, that showing struggle in this way, where you keep reiterating that people do not have money, that they're in this situation, like continually sort of showing that in this way was not actually transcending it and was not actually offering a new thing to this conversation about another small town struggling. And I took a long, hard look at what I really wanted to do for this film. And one of the big things I thought about was one of the huge powers of film is to make you look at something in a new way. I thought that by creating a premise where instead of what might happen, will this town be saved? Will this thing actually help them so they can have an economic chance? Instead saying this thing has already happened, and now let's look at the people who stayed. Let's look at them in their lives, and let's ask different questions. Let's not ask if the spaceport is going to save them. Let's ask why they stayed, and how are they finding meaning in their life?
Can you talk a little bit about that process?
So there's a lot of false starts. There's a lot of making mistakes and building cuts that aren't like that, and then having to go in the other direction. There's a lot of having to second guess my own voice. So an example of this is George, who is this collector that we would go to ancient dumps and we would find things in the recycling bins and these kinds of things. The first few times I met him, both at his house and then at the ancient dump, he was showing me his collections and he was so excited. I made a cut where I cut all that stuff out. And instead I made a cut where we talked about how he had OCD and why, you know, like how he was being like attacked by the local government and how he felt like a victim. I made that cut. And one of the radical things that's happened in this new premise is that I've made the other cut. I've made the cut where he is able to show, like now he's much more like a historian. He finds these things and he understands the history of the place and he's so excited about them and he collects them and he's building his own museum. And it's not because he has a disease. It's because he looks closely. It's because he's built an incredible life for himself. It's because he knows things. It's because he looks at the seemingly insignificant and sees its value. And that's who George is, not this other thing. And so more and more I try to go by whatever would make me make that film. And that's my guiding principle in the edit.
You talked about the freedom that you got from just accepting this thing. And I think it's
so
beautiful.
Fun, no?
Like, I think that's amazing. Of like,
everything's so much more playful, so much more fun, so much more honest. No more of this, like, trying to cram this narrative onto this footage. I can just let the footage be what it is now. And it's so much better.
You're listening to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Emily Edwards. So we just talked about cutting and reshaping a film. Filmmaker Elizabeth Lowe joins us from Hong Kong. Her film follows the experience of stray dogs living on the streets of Istanbul, Turkey, a city in a great state of flux. Over the summer, she was considering making the decision to go back and continue filming. After her months and months of shooting, she had a wealth of footage, but she wasn't really sure how much of it would work for the film.
During the retreat, you talked about maybe going back and continuing one of the dog stories.
Yeah. I filmed with Zaytan and Kartal as the puppy. I filmed with them over the course of 3 months, basically. There were times when I departed from Istanbul to go to other cities that may still be a part of the film to follow other dog characters. Overall, it was 3 months of time with them. And it was really interesting to sort of just get to know their routine, like where they hung out at night and in the mornings and where they preferred to sleep, what they did at night. Usually they seem to sort of adjust to a human rhythm of life. Like by midnight, they were kind of really sleepy and would try to find a place to curl up. And then around like 9 a.m. is when they would wake up. At the retreat, I was considering going out to film with the dogs again. But I had decided that I should really work through all the footage and look at everything that I had before trying to make another trip out there. And I think the film will not require me to go out again to follow the dogs, to continue the dog stories. But I don't totally know yet.
Personally watching it, I was so compelled by the dog narrative, and I was so struck by actually how well you built a narrative out of dogs. You know, you have this rise and fall and kind of big upsets. I don't know if you want to talk about the puppies a little, but kind of how you built this narrative drama out of these dogs' lives.
It's interesting. Like, I never thought of this film as a plot-driven or story-driven film, and I didn't know what to expect going out there. I was just hoping that because I had scouted the idea a year ago for a month, and then coming back, I just knew I wanted to like hone in on characters so that audiences could have a being that they could relate to and build empathy for, and get over that hump that you might have trying to cross over to another species on screen. And I, my attitude was really not to plan anything and to just really like be like, leave the schedule so open that we just follow dogs and then see where they take us very literally. And that's how we found this Zaytan character, because we saw her running through a tunnel that dogs normally wouldn't be in. And we wondered, like, what are these dogs doing and why are they in such a hurry? Where are they off to? And they led us to the teenagers, who end up being a fairly large part of the film. And these teenagers are from Syria, and they're homeless on the streets trying to make a living in Istanbul, where they have sought refuge and have been given refuge.
After you shot with these dogs for 3 months and you had this wealth of footage, can you talk about the culling process a little bit, of how, what were the indicators of a right moment for you, or what really jumped out as you were going through your footage?
I knew the footage pretty well, but I hadn't looked at the footage really for the 3 months while I was there. So looking at all of the footage in one go, right before the rough cut retreat, was a really, really great experience, kind of being able to like relive the 3 months that I was in Turkey. And in terms of like culling, the culling process, it like shots that I just loved the movement of, and shots that sort of executed the thesis of the film, which is, you know, following dogs, and then through those dogs you see their quote-unquote humanity, but also you see the humanity around them and the dramas that people are going through. When shots were able to do that, I was really excited, and of course would pull those. But a lot of it does feel like manual labor, going through the footage and just trying to find what's usable. And then I found, now that I'm deeper into the edit, like the things that I thought were not usable before, you know, the shakier stuff, I'm going back and pulling more of it because of this newfound realization that people want to be a part of just the dogs' lives even more than I thought they were. So before, when I was pulling, I had this emphasis on like the human observations from the point of view of the dog. But now, as I go back again, I'm looking for just like pure dog life. I think one of the big takeaways, and people seem torn about this, was whether the film should just follow the story of these teenagers and this dog Zaytan and the adventures and misadventures they go through, versus a more expansive, associative edit that weaves between various different dog characters and isn't as focused on sort of what happens to the dogs, but is more atmospheric and essayistic in this wandering way. And in some ways, you know, it's great that there's this story, a narrative to hang on to, that we stumbled upon in Istanbul with these dogs and these kids. But I also feel, and I'm still struggling with this, I don't know what the film will end up being yet, because I'm still constructing the other parts that are outside of the story and seeing how they can fit in. But I can already sense sort of almost the hegemony of the story, that the momentum, the narrative momentum of the theft of the puppy that is a part of this Istanbul storyline or Zaytan storyline is so, it's powerful. And how do you respect that storytelling momentum and an audience's sort of allegiance to that story, emotional allegiance to that story, while trying to expand beyond it? But yeah, it's an unexpected problem that I've had, but it's interesting. It's made me reflect like about the decisions I made in the field also, because in the field, I wanted to not just stick with single characters, even though I sought out characters, but I wanted it to be expansive within Turkey. So I don't know what's going to happen yet. But I have this feeling that like the power of the story is going to take over. And I just have to figure out how to still incorporate the original vision for the film and still respect the emotional power of what I stumbled upon.
That's all for this episode of the True False podcast. Thank you to filmmakers Mo Scarpelli, Hannah Jansey, and Elizabeth Lowe. And thanks to True False's Emily Edwards, who interviewed them all. In our next episode, Emily will be back talking to two more filmmakers from the Rough Cut Retreat. They'll discuss a filmmaker's responsibility to their subjects and their audience. You can find more of our conversations with filmmakers at kbia.org, on iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, leave us a review. It'll help more people find the show. This episode was produced by Rosemary Belson and edited by Ryan Familiner. The song you heard was Marissa Anderson's Into the Light, and the introduction was created by Tim Pilcher using sounds from the True False Film Fest. I'm Allison Kofeld. Thanks for listening.